Senator Cranston, you're part of the top leadership of the Senate. Do you know whether President Carter has sent the government of Iran a proposal for some kind of explanation or a limited mea culpa on American policy toward that country? If you don't know, do you think perhaps he should or should not?
I do not know whether he has or not. I don't think he should. I think that a time will come when we should explore the American relationship to the Shah and to Iran. And I think the white paper that the Senate Foreign Relations Committee will now work on will be helpful. But I don't think we should be seeming to yield to blackmail by starting any confessions of any sort at this time.
From CBS News, Washington, Face the Nation on the CBS Radio Network. A spontaneous and unrehearsed news interview with the Senate Majority Whip, Alan Cranston, Democrat of California. Senator Cranston will be questioned by CBS News correspondent Jim McManus, by Lisa Myers, Senate correspondent for the Washington Star, and by the moderator, CBS News correspondent George Herman.
Senator Cranston, the news today is about a possible message from the American government to the Iranian government. You said that you thought that this might be explored in the white paper. Is this a subject, the question of any explanation or mea culpa or whatever it is eventually going to be, is this something to be worked out between the two branches of government, the Congress and the White House, or is this something that one side should do alone?
I think the more we have cooperation between the White House and the Congress on such a very sensitive matter, the better. And the white paper is a matter of discussion between the executive branch and the Senate Foreign Relations Committee at this time.
Senator, the administration is planning this week to announce another series of actions against Iran in the diplomatic and economic arenas to try to increase pressure for them to release the hostages. Do you feel that these measures, which are non-belligerent apparently and do not do anything that would, in the administration's opinion, terribly damage Iran, are sufficiently strong to make a difference?
I hope they will be sufficiently strong to make a difference, but we have a very delicate problem. We don't want to push the Iranians into the embrace of the Soviet Union. And very harsh steps by us, or steps that were very destabilizing to the present unstable Iranian government, might create a situation that the Soviets could take advantage of. That would make a bad situation even worse. We also, obviously, must stay away from aggressive military moves that would endanger the lives of the hostages.
Senator Cranston, given the difficulties you've just mentioned, and given the fact that the Senate Foreign Relations Committee is merely considering the issuance of a white paper describing 25 years of foreign relations between the United States and Iran, why not simply apologize, move this issue forward, satisfy the militants up to the point of returning the Shah, which we cannot do, rather than wait on these delayed parliamentary elections? Why not apologize?
Well, what are we supposed to apologize for? That is not precisely clear. I think there should be a careful study of what we did and did not do in relationship to foisting the Shah off on the people of Iran, keeping him in power, and relating ourselves closely to a regime that many feel was very harsh and cruel. But all those facts have not been adequately and objectively explored. I think that should be done before any statements are made. And I don't think it would be appropriate for the United States to apologize under duress.
Senator, we've been nibbling, the U.S. government has just been nibbling at this issue for almost 5 months now. You've described the difficulties in trying to reapply economic sanctions, which requires a great deal of cooperation from our allies. Very difficult situation. What else can we do?
The president is now going to try some other steps. We hope they will work. One of our great difficulties is that we are dealing with a country where nobody seems to be clearly in charge, where it's not clear who we can deal with, and where they appear to be irrational from our point of view. Probably we appear to be rational from their point of view, but that makes negotiating and working out our great difficulty with them very, very difficult. I respect the restraint that the president and the maturity that the American people have shown in recognizing that very belligerent actions would be certain to fail.
Senator, you in the past have called for an economic and diplomatic quarantine of Iran. You asked that all trade with that country be cut off and that Iranian diplomats here either be expelled or interned. Do you think that the measures that the president will announce this week go far enough? Do they go as far as you would like them to go in putting pressure on Iran?
I'm not sure what he's going to do, so I'm not going to quarrel about them until I see what they are. I think they will be strong. There is the difficulty of not being too weak, but not overdoing it. So I think all we can do now is see what he proposes, what he does, and what the response is.
Senator Cranston, as Perry Mason says, you opened the door on this one, so let me explore it a little bit. You said probably they think that our actions, the American actions, are somewhat irrational, and it's a little hard to tell who is in control. Let me explore with you whether you think our attempts to establish a position with Iran are damaged by what some people are calling disarray in our own foreign policy mechanism between the president, Zbigniew Brzezinski, Secretary Vance, who now seems to be somewhat damaged in the eyes of some in the foreign policy establishment. Are we being damaged by this disarray in our own government?
We were certainly damaged by what happened at the United Nations in respect to the UN resolution relating to Israel and peace in the Middle East. That was a rather unique circumstance. I don't think that generally there has been great disarray in our conduct of foreign policy. We're dealing with a very turbulent, volatile, changing world. We need to change our directions, but not our principles, rather frequently. There is one person in charge and one person responsible, and that's President Carter. It is not clear that Mr. Khomeini or any other particular person is in charge in Iran. It's very, very different.
Let me just pursue a moment the difficulties of trying to enunciate American policy through Secretary Vance. There seems to be some feeling, I don't know to how extent it spread, but that Secretary Vance has been damaged, that he's no longer particularly credible, that he may not be long in this job. Is he still as useful as he was before to the administration? Is he still as credible?
He was certainly damaged, and the president was damaged, politically as well as in terms of diplomacy, by the events at the United Nations. However, I think that Secretary Vance is basically a man who understands the world, and I respect the fundamental approaches that in most instances he takes to foreign policy. No, I don't think he's been damaged to the degree that he should leave. He has announced that he does not intend to stay as Secretary of State in a second Carter term, if there is a second Carter term, so there will be a change there at some point.
Given the fact that Secretary Vance was the one who was sent to Capitol Hill to try to explain that United Nations resolution vote, do you expect that he will have a great deal to do this coming month with the meetings that the president will hold with Prime Minister Begin and President Sadat?
I'm certain that the Secretary of State, at least I presume that the Secretary of State, he will play a significant role there. But basically, that becomes man-to-man diplomacy, the president with Sadat, the president with Begin, and we hope perhaps all three of them together. And what is achieved at that level will be the significant aspect of those diplomatic efforts.
What I'm trying to find out is whether it looks to you as though at some point here and there in the course of this Iranian thing, the administration has botched the job a little bit one way or the other and has weakened its own case by poor workmanship.
I think you have to go all the way back to the beginning of the crisis to really fault what has occurred. I do not fault the decision to permit the Shah to enter this country. I think that that was necessary and appropriate given our past relationship with him and his health. I do feel that, in retrospect, it would have been far wiser for the president to have taken steps to ensure the safety of our people in Iran. There apparently were reasons to fear for what might happen when the Shah came in, and I think we should have closed our embassy and removed our personnel simultaneously with the permission to the Shah to come to this country. Since that time, I think the president has handled a very difficult situation with restraint and wisdom and with imagination and seeking different ways to go to resolve an incredible situation.
Okay, so on balancing the budget, the Senate this week agreed to a resolution that said that the fiscal 1981 balance budget would be in balance. Where will the cuts come? Will there be any cuts affecting, say, food stamps or welfare or Social Security, or are they basically going to be in areas where there is not a strong political constituency to fight them?
First, let me say that this is not a sudden last ditch effort to balance the budget. We have been coming down steadily, with an aberration this year where it may go slightly up, since the last Ford deficit, which was $66 billion. We've come down each year until this year we're going to be in the high 20s or the low 30s, and we're going to balance it next year. So it's been a progression, not a sudden emergency rush, although we're speeding up the process because we must. Every single program is being scrutinized. I've been in these endless meetings where we've gone over the budget time after time after time. Every program will be reduced in some way except defense. But even defense will be carefully pruned to get rid of what can be put off or ended to make room for so-called readiness efforts to strengthen our defense, which we have to do in the light of Soviet behavior.
Does every program include Social Security?
No. There will not be a cut in Social Security. I strongly oppose any cut in Social Security. There will be no cut there. I'm absolutely certain of that point.
Virtually, there'll be a smaller than expected rise in Social Security.
No. I think there will be I'm sure there will be the rise in Social Security that is based on the cost of living index that the Social Security recipients anticipate, count on, and will get.
Twice a year or once a year?
It will continue at the present basis. On other programs, every general category will be cut. There are 14,000 different items in the budget, and obviously some of them will not be cut. Head Start, for example, is a very, very effective program that I think will not be cut and should not be cut. But every other category, regardless of political difficulty, will suffer some cut, even veterans programs, and they are very strong politically and very tough to tackle politically, will be cut in some way, but not in ways that deny or fail to fulfill our obligations to veterans. No cuts will be made there that interfere with their health care, which is a high priority. In terms of general categories, I believe there will be a cut and should be a cut in revenue sharing to the states. There should be some slowdown in water projects, in farm programs, across the boards, cuts, no matter how difficult. Every single program has its supporters. And for every one of them, somebody comes and says, this is very good, don't cut this, but do balance the budget. We have to stop inflation. If we succumb to those blandishments, we will not balance the budget. We have to be stern. As Senator Russell Long has said in a little ditty that he recites, don't cut you, don't cut me, cut that fellow behind that tree. If we succumb to that, we won't balance the budget, we won't stop inflation.
Senator, there's pretty general agreement now, it appears, between the House Budget Committee, the Senate Budget Committee, and the White House that the cuts in the fiscal 81 budget will be somewhere in the neighborhood of $15.5 to $16 billion, and there's already talk of tax cuts sometime, perhaps, even in late 1981 as a result of this presumed surplus. Do you really believe there's going to be a surplus and that the tax cut is probable?
I think we have a good prospect of having a surplus. First, let me say that we're going to balance the budget without a tax increase. The efforts we are making will lead to cuts. I think they may be higher than $16 billion, maybe $20 billion. But we will make sufficient cuts to balance the budget. We will have an increase in revenues if withholding on dividends and interest is enacted. That requires congressional action. It's controversial.
And it's in some trouble right now.
I think it should be done. There's some trouble. Maybe it won't happen. The president has imposed a tariff, or will impose a tariff, on imported oil that will produce $10 or $11 billion. I favor the tariff. I oppose, as I understand it now, his suggestion for a tax to produce the revenue in a different way. I think that tax only on people who use gasoline is not an appropriate or fair way to do it. And I think transforming the tariff to a tax tends to reduce the opportunity to cut back on imports. And that should be a major objective of that tariff. The tariff will produce money that can do one of two things: either provide a cushion to ensure a balanced budget in case our figures are wrong and we need some additional funding, and we won't know that till we find out whether we're going to have a serious recession or some kind of a recession or not. Secondly, if the money is not used for that, it should be used, I believe, for a tax cut. And I strongly favor, and here I differ with the president, I strongly favor a tax cut designed to enhance productivity in our economy. I don't think that we should try to cure inflation by a recession. I oppose the high interest rates, which I think are highly inflationary. I would like to see, and I think a majority in the Congress now would like to see, tax cuts designed to enhance investment in productive tools, machinery, that will aid our productivity and enable us to compete more effectively with Germany and Japan and other competitors.
Senator, you say the budget is not being balanced by increasing taxes, yet the president's budget figures show that taxes will rise approximately $94 billion that next year over this year's taxation levels, including a large, almost $20 billion increase in Social Security taxes next January.
I was talking about what we're doing now. We are not raising the tax rates in any way. The actions that were taken in the past have their effect, of course, on revenues. There are proposals for tax cuts by the Republicans that would be across the board. I think that would be very unwise. Their general approach seems to be balance the budget, increase defense spending, cut taxes, and I don't see how that can be done. One way that tax take is increased is because we don't have indexing, and inflation pushes people into higher brackets and they have to pay more without having a commensurate increase in their take-home pay. That's, I think, very unfair and unfortunate. I have advocated going to indexing to eliminate that, and I hope we can get to that sometime. I'm afraid we can't right now because if we did, it would unbalance the budget, and we must, as a first priority, balance the budget.
Senator, just back from California, what did your constituents say in California? Are they all talking about inflation? Are they beginning to talk about unemployment? Do they agree with some of the economists who say that we are already starting a recession?
The people in California, and I think they are typical of the people elsewhere in their present concerns, are most of all concerned about inflation. There is concern about unemployment among those that have the gravest fear that they will lose their jobs or who don't have jobs and are seeking them. But I think inflation is way ahead in terms of general concern. Secondly, energy. And thirdly, concern about international affairs, Iran, Afghanistan, the Russians, what's happening. I am seeking to reassure people on the last point. I do not believe we're on the brink of war with the Soviet Union for several reasons. First, we're the strongest nation on earth, and they know it, the Russians, and we know it. And if anybody doubts that, I can go into that in great detail. Secondly, the Russians are rather cautious. They make aggressive moves only when they are pretty certain they can get away with those aggressive moves without a direct military confrontation. Our responses to Afghanistan have made very clear that any aggressive moves by them that directly threaten our national interests and our freedom and security will entail grave risks of military confrontation. For those reasons, I do not think we're anywhere close to war with them.
Senator, you say that Californians are very much concerned about inflation, energy, international affairs. Do Californians now blame President Carter for their problems?
I don't think the people of California blame anybody in particular for their problems.
They recognize it. To,
I think if they blame any one source, they blame the Arab nations for raising the price of oil as sharply as they have. The oil price increases plainly have been a major factor in our inflation, and I think the American people, the people in California along with them, tend to blame the giant oil companies in part for that.
If the President and Senator Kennedy were in a primary in California this week, how would it come out?
I think it would be touch and go. I would hesitate to predict how that would come out.
Well, can you explain?
But the primary will be in June, and things have changed so rapidly this year in presidential politics that I would not make any prediction about what will happen in June.
But if you could just explain a little bit why you think it's touch and go right now, what the elements are of that mix.
Well, New York was a more precise example, I think, of the president's current political problems. That election came the same week or in the same days as the fiasco at the United Nations. It came the same time that the Iran problems did not resolve themselves as many hoped they would. It came at the same time as indications that inflation was not being dealt with effectively at this point, and a recognition that it's going to take a while for any turnaround to occur. All of that added up to a circumstance where the president suffered politically. But things do change so rapidly that I have no idea how he will do in coming primaries.
Senator, on the basis of what you know now, would you think that President Carter or Senator Kennedy would be a more formidable opponent for Governor Reagan in November?
I really would hesitate to state on that, partly because I am staying neutral in that race. I'm busy running for the Senate this year, and I've deliberately decided and announced long ago that I would not involve myself in presidential campaigning. I believe that either one of those people, Senator Kennedy or President Carter, would give a very strong race to the prospective Republican nominee. I think that nominee will be Ronald Reagan.
Well, then let me ask you about Congress. Although we tend to blame presidents for a lot of the national problems, the fact is that a lot of things that concern the voters right now, spending, government spending, big deficits, taxes, are all largely controlled by Congress. The Democrats have been in control of Congress for more than two decades, and here we find ourselves in this mess. Why should the voters return the Democrats to power in Congress this year rather than giving the Republicans a chance for a change?
Well, I think their past experiences with Republican Congresses have given them warning of what to expect. We had Herbert Hoover, and we had a very serious problem. We had the Nixon-Ford era, and we had double-digit inflation and high unemployment.
That was a Democratic Congress. That was a Democratic Congress.
But Congress has to work with a president, or we have a deadlock in our democracy. A Congress like Lyndon Johnson, when he was majority leader, went out of his way to cooperate with the Republican in the White House. You use the word the mess we're in. I do not think that we are in a total mess in our country. We have great problems. The people are concerned. But I have great faith in the American people and in our traditions and in our institutions to overcome our difficulties. We are the most powerful nation on earth. We're the most stable, long-lived democracy on the face of the earth. We have freedom. We have technology and innovativity that comes from all of that. We have creative people that recognize their problems but are stable in terms of their willingness to seek sensible solutions to them. And while we have our troubles now, I think we're going to be doing pretty well in the course of the future, and compared to most other people on the face of this earth, we're doing very well right now.
We also have a credit crunch right now that must be hitting a lot of people. Did you hear nothing while you were in California about the difficulty farmers borrowing money to keep their farms going through this period?
I heard a great deal about the high interest rates, particularly in relationship to housing, and I am very opposed to those high interest rates. I think they are themselves inflationary, and I wish the administration would place less reliance upon the Federal Reserve and its policies of high interest rates and turn to other approaches. Again, productivity.
Does that depend on Congress?
Productivity is a key step, and we will take those steps regardless of President Carter's opposition. He did not want us to cut the capital gains tax 2 years ago. We did. It's worked very well. We should now go further with investment tax credits, with further cuts in capital gains, and with the more rapid depreciation write-off, which will give the American workers the tools they need to outproduce others in this world.
But that waits until you see whether you have, in fact, a balanced budget.
No, we can start that next year, and we should start it next year. We'll have to phase it in so that we don't unbalance the budget. But that's the way to work our way out of recession and out of inflation, rather than recession our way out of it.
Thank you very much for being our guest today, Senator Cranston.
Thank you.
Today on Face the Nation, the Senate Majority Whip, Alan Cranston, Democrat of California, was interviewed by CBS News correspondent Jim McManus, by Lisa Myers, Senate correspondent for the Washington Star, and by the moderator, CBS News correspondent George Herman.